A very happy morning to all of you.
First of all, what are some of the concerns of the UK government on the recent political development in South Sudan?
Well, we have been very concerned about recent events. But if I may, first of all, I want to just emphasize that the United Kingdom is here. I am here, our embassy is here, and has been throughout this crisis and has been throughout recent years. Our work is for, we hope, the benefit of the people of South Sudan. We've supported this country throughout its process towards independence and in its first few years, and we will continue to do so. But the events of July were a shock, and it's clearly a shock to everyone, to the leaders themselves of this country, to the people of South Sudan, clearly, and also to the international community, who I think has been disappointed and surprised to see a crisis right at the top of government. So there's a lot of work to do. The other point I think I would like to make is to welcome very warmly, on behalf of my government, the words of His Excellency the President yesterday in the opening of Parliament. Mm-hmm. I think it was a speech which pointed a way, which set out some of the challenges ahead, but made some clear messages about dialogue, about the future for this country, and also about working with the international community. So we might come back to that, but we do welcome that speech.
Right. Now that the United Nations resolution has been adopted, can we expect a change or shift in the UK engagement with South Sudan? And if so, what shift should we expect and in what areas?
Well, I think the resolution is a very important moment, and I think it's particularly important not to misinterpret it. It's very understandable if your listeners or even people in government have not read every single word of the resolution. But mm-hmm. I think it is very important to study actually what it says and to bear in mind that it's one of a long series of statements by the Security Council. And the Security Council is after all, the prime international body in the world. And Security Council resolutions have a legal status. But I think it's important both to really understand the impact which this reflects, the impact of recent events on global opinion. But at the same time, we need to take the resolution, the ideas in the resolution, we need to discuss them. And the United Kingdom, with our allies, we have been talking to the leaders of South Sudan already about the implications of the resolution and how together we can work out a way forward. So, in answer to your question, the United Kingdom will be committed to that process. We're obliged to be. We're a permanent member of the Security Council, so we have a responsibility with the other members of the Council. We remain committed to South Sudan and its people. So in terms of our bilateral programs, the work we're doing in the humanitarian field particularly, which is particularly necessary at the moment, but also in education, in health, in other areas, we do plan on continuing as far as we can.
Yes, like you echoed in the beginning of this interview about the speech made yesterday by the President when he was inaugurating the Transitional National Legislative Assembly. And in his speech, he said the government has not voiced any objection to the protection force and that he was actually open to dialogue with the international partners. Will the UK, as one of the 11 Security Council members that voted in favor of the resolution, be ready to make compromises if suggested by the government?
When you look at the resolution, there are provisions in there for consultations. So there are ideas set out about what the protection force should do. It's within the context of the United Nations mandate, which was being extended anyway. But there are provisions in there for further consultation with the government. So I think it's important we follow that line, and absolutely the UK government will be both committed to the resolution, but also committed to coming up with a realistic result which actually helps the stability of this country. And as the president said, that this should strengthen rather than diminish South Sudan.
The UK once again is one of the countries pushing for an arms embargo, and the council voted, and it returns to the matters after the Secretary General presents a report in 30 days. Is this 30 days period helpful?
I think it's very important to emphasise that we are at a point where the council expects South Sudan, and indeed expects its member states, to actually make progress on this resolution. And if that, as the resolution itself says, if that requires some adaptation of the mandate which is set out, then that is open. But you mentioned the arms embargo, and it is there. It is there as an annex. It is there, and it will be implemented should there not be any progress. My country has consistently been in favour of an arms embargo. We, with our European partners, already have an arms embargo against both Sudan and South Sudan, and we believe that is necessary. But the international agreement is that this should only be imposed in the event of failure to make progress.
Okay, and maybe let's just take a look at some of the kind of support Britain is providing to support the South Sudan humanitarian needs currently.
Yes, thank you for that opportunity. We are one of course, of a number of countries, but the UK is, I think, after the United States, the biggest contributor financially. We work through the United Nations, and we work through other partner organisations to help across South Sudan. We are very, very concerned about the level of hunger. This is partly for natural reasons, and partly as a result of the conflict. And it can be seen in areas which have not been subject to conflict, as well as those which have. There's a huge amount of displacement. We've seen now a further flow of refugees across the border, and hundreds of thousands of people displaced. So the situation is very concerning. We have strongly supported the United Nations appeal. We work closely with the United Nations in trying to help coordinate the international effort. And we commend the work done by the United Nations and all its agencies. As part of our discussion with the government, one of the things we see as absolutely vital is that there should be access, there should be no obstruction of the delivery of humanitarian assistance. And it's very welcome that His Excellency the President has also sent orders in this respect. We do need to see a better performance. Mm-hmm. This is not simply a demand. It's by us. It's a requirement for the people of South Sudan. So better and better access. And I hope, as we move forward, we can all together establish a better relationship together. So it is understood that humanitarian help is the priority for this country. Of course, in the long term, we all want to move towards a model where South Sudan is completely self-sufficient, and that perhaps our assistance is more based on development. And development is something we do pursue in our education programs, for example. But at the moment, the crisis involves urgent humanitarian help. And I always quote a general figure. It's one that my aid colleagues sometimes pick me up on because they're very accurate. Mm-hmm. But the way I put it to explain it is that we probably put about $1 million a day into this country and across our various international contributions. And that has real impact back in my country. This is one of the main crises in the world in humanitarian terms. And it is one which is close to the hearts of many people in the United Kingdom. So I'm confident that we will continue that. We are all already looking to bring forward some of the expenditure which we were planning on making in future years to deal with the current crisis. There needs to be an even bigger international response. And there also needs to be, I think, one key thing, which is a discussion we are having with the government and with the Minister of Humanitarian Affairs, which is that this issue belongs to South Sudan. It belongs to the government of South Sudan. It's a priority for the government. And even though funding might come from partner countries, and we of course, you know, want to do so, the issue itself must belong at the centre of policy making in this country. It must not just be left as something which that it's just taken for granted that foreign donors assist. So we are looking as we go forward to closer and closer working with the government of South Sudan. It's welcome that the two organizations dealing with displaced people are now coming together. Mm. That is absolutely essential. And we cannot afford, literally we cannot afford, to be in a situation where there's a sort of parallel approach where government work in humanitarian field is somehow separated from the international effort. We need to be absolutely together, but it needs to be at the top of South Sudanese government policy, so that our assistance is assistance both to the people of South Sudan, but also to the policy direction of this government.
Right. Now, Hesper, you are discussing with the government, especially the Minister of Humanitarian Affairs, in regards to concern that are always raised on the need to ease access. Is there any kind of promises they have made, which you have heard from the humanitarian agencies operating throughout the country, that yes, this has been implemented, these agencies have reached destination A successfully without being blocked on the way?
Yes, it goes without saying that a lot of the majority of aid deliveries reach their target through the hard work of everybody, through the delivery agencies on the ground, the South Sudanese partners and the international agencies. But the problems of obstruction continue. Now, some of those are criminal. They're illegal checkpoints. There is looting. And, of course, we understand in a situation of conflict and disturbance, this is not simply a question of the government issuing an order and that stopping. This takes a lot of time to control, and, of course, we appreciate that. But there are other areas where, for example, some states have been imposing penal taxation on the movement of goods, which presumably is some means of raising money for some purpose, but should not be done. According to international convention, it is not permitted to be taxing to a huge extent the delivery of humanitarian supplies. So that is a problem. Flights, I think, has been a problem. Now, there are sometimes real security reasons why that should be the case. But we need to work together, I think, we all need to work together to create a culture where the assumption is that access is the norm, and that where applications for flight clearances are made, these are processed quickly and positively. There are some capacity issues where maybe we, the donors, can help in some way. But we need to work together to establish a relationship of trust, so that the norm is that the government and the security forces will grant passage. There has been a case recently, which I'm glad to say has now been resolved, where airdrops by the WFP were being blocked, and this caused us enormous concern, because these airdrops are only, of course, made in areas of real need, and so stopping them for apparent political reasons could have had disastrous results. So we're very glad we've worked together, and are grateful to those who have solved that particular issue. So there's still a lot of work to be done. There's some positive words from the top on it, from government. And I think, you know, the reality is that we just need to keep working to build up the trust, build up the cooperation, so that work can go forward.
And briefly and finally, Ambassador, the people of South Sudan just need peace. what they need currently is peace, and what is the United Kingdom government doing to ensure that at least there is a total peace in this country, besides supporting humanitarian organization and also maybe engaging the leaders, really? What can the UK government do to see that there is an everlasting peace in this country?
Well, yes, thank you for asking, and this is what we all pray for and we all are working for. And I started off this interview, or soon after starting this interview, talking about the Security Council resolution, but I don't want to imply that that somehow is the answer to peace.
Mm-hmm.
The answer to peace is essentially political. It's essentially about the leaders of this country and those who have been in dispute with each other changing their approach. I found there was some very wise speech on this yesterday, and I know that the people of South Sudan and the international community will be waiting in the expectation that the spirit of that speech will be implemented. I think that the role of countries like ours is to demonstrate friendship, it's to demonstrate commitment to this country, but it's to make it also absolutely clear that we expect the leaders of the country to take responsibility for their people. It's to put the priority at the top, which is the people of this country and saving their lives, settling down, and of course peace is crucial to that, and that comes above political competition. And the role of outsiders, I think, the role of donors and of friends of South Sudan, like the United Kingdom, is to go on discussing, to an extent to reassure, to say that some of the things being spoken at the moment, some of the things perhaps being spoken in anger, and possibly an anger created by the crisis itself, are not the case. They're not the case. This is a great country. It's going to be successful. It has a wonderful young generation. But what is really essential now is that it settles down and the political leadership rethink their approach and think long-term about the future of their country. And I think it's absolutely essential that the friends of South Sudan are here, are close to both the leaders and the people of South Sudan, and deliver those messages by persuasion. But the answer is a political one, and it will be achieved in that way by the leaders of this country and by those who support them in this country.